Hi, this is Paul Marks, host and producer of Multifamily Matters. Today we're going to air the best of Multifamily Matters. It's a very educational and informative episode, so listen and enjoy the best of Multifamily Matters.
Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks. We have a great show with two special guests who are extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. And today we're discussing NMHC, a look ahead to 2021 and beyond. And I'm honored to have joining me today by phone, truly a multifamily industry legend, Doug Bibby, president of the National Multifamily Housing Council, which is also known as NMHC. And also joining me is a great multifamily industry leader, David Schwartz, CEO, chairman, and co-founder of Waterton. And David also serves as the current chair of the NMHC. So welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Paul.
Yeah, so you know, I'm very familiar with NMHC. You know, we have listeners all over the country who tune in who are in the multifamily industry, and I'm sure they're familiar with, a lot of them are familiar with different organizations. But if they're not exactly familiar with NMHC and its history and its role in the multifamily industry, Doug, what is that? Let's give them some background.
Sure, I'm delighted to tell you. I mean, it started in the late 70s, and basically there were some very severe rent control provisions across, I think, 35 states, and it was making development very, very difficult. And it was founded by a group of 15 developers who just pushed and pushed to try to unwind some of these onerous rent control regulations and so on. And it's morphed over many years to become one of the leading voices for multifamily housing. We have about 1,500 member companies, and they are developers, owners, managers, financiers, and service providers to the industry. And basically, we're what is known as a 501c6. So we're not a typical nonprofit, and a 501c6 is allowed to lobby. I have a team of about 8 lobbyists who are, 4 cover the Democrats, 4 cover the Republicans. And we have a research staff, we have a communication staff, and we provide a broad range of services to the industry. Very proud of what we're doing, and we had a big hand in the most recent package coming out that provides for rental assistance to the industry and a continuation of other benefits. So, David, I don't know if you want to say anything else about NMHC.
Well, I'm a member and the chair, current chair, but is a member for multiple decades. NMHC watches our back. So if you're a big owner, operator, developer, NMHC is really looking after our interests and guiding us, and has been to me and a lot of members really stepped up in the pandemic in guiding us through this, leading the efforts on Capitol Hill, because this has been a doozy of a downturn for our industry.
Yeah, and you know, I've attended several of the conferences that you've had in the last years, including the most recent one, which was virtual. But one of the things that I noticed is, you know, and what you described, Doug and David, is a lot of the stuff that you guys are working on behind the scenes. But when you get to those conferences, I just want to read something that was on your the NMHC website. It says, NMHC is a place where leaders of the apartment industry come together to guide their future success. With the industry's most prominent and creative leaders at the helm, NMHC provides a forum for insight, advocacy, and action that enable both members and the communities they build to thrive. And I really found that to be true. I was very impressed when I sat in on some of the meetings, the discussions amongst the different members of NMHC on the topics they were discussing. And you know, David, I'm sure as someone who is a professional in the industry, That's got to be a place to be able to get together with your peers and have those types of discussions. It's got to be helpful to what you're trying to build with your own company.
Absolutely. It's, you know, our annual meeting, which we're conducting virtually this year, and our first session is today, is thought of as the premier multifamily gathering of not just leaders in the industry, of course, are the leaders of big CEOs of the REITs and developers, but kind of everyone. And it's the programming, the networking, the thought leadership. It's a can't miss meeting each year.
Let's talk about this last year that we've had, and NMHC's perspective on that. You know, we saw what happened at the beginning of the year, this time last year, and within a couple of months with the global pandemic and all the different layers of confusion that was out there as far as, you know, what are you supposed to do? How do you keep your multifamily offices operating? And to the rent issues and collection issues that we've had in the industry. Let's talk a little bit about that. Doug, you want to speak to that?
Sure. I think that, you know, I think it was March 12th when most people shut down their offices, and we were very concerned that we would see a severe drop-off in collections. And we decided, you know, as an association, that the best thing we could do for the industry was provide guidance, you know, how to do, obviously waive late fees, you know, maybe don't evict for a period of time, whether it's 30 days or 60 days or whatever, you know, work out plans with residents and so on. And you know, we've got a great response from the membership. But also what we found is that the CARES Act provided, you know, $600 in unemployment insurance benefits every single week. Mm-hmm. And so that was enormously helpful to us and actually proved the concept for the first 6 months of the pandemic that you don't need an eviction moratorium. If people have the resources to pay, they really value their credit histories, and they don't want those marred, because if they want to buy in the future or whatever they want to use their credit history for, they don't want a black mark on it. And so the residents themselves moved heaven and earth to make their payments. The owners moved heaven and earth to work with their residents. And so what we saw was a very stable marketplace, even down through, you know, C-level housing, if you will. You know, but can you think about it? If you have an $800 a month rent and you're getting $600 a week, you know, you can make ends meet. So I think I was really, really proud of the industry, you know, and David should talk to that too with his own staff, but very proud of the industry and the way that we responded to this pandemic and to the economic downturn.
Yeah, David, we've got about 3 minutes left in this segment. Let's talk a little bit from an operational standpoint, what you discovered.
Well, you know, in March, as an operator, owner, along with our peers, we were all on our back foot. We've never had to operate in an environment like this. And so, you know, one is when the shutdowns hit, we and NMHC was responsible for this, but we were able to get our employees designated as essential so they could show up to work. We still have to provide maintenance and services to our residents. And the reality is our apartment communities became more than just people's home. It became where people work. They were homeschooling in our residential communities. So we became a very, you know, critical part of essentials in society in a pandemic. And getting our people to work and keeping them safe was kind of priority A number one, and getting them the necessary PPE to be able to operate in that environment. And then, you know, the guidance NMHC gave us, was critical, that Doug referred to, and doing that quickly, because we didn't know what to do. You know, people are going to stop paying rent. What are you, you know, what should you do? And so that guidance really, which was surrounded by the underlying theory of let's figure out a way to keep people in their homes in the pandemic. We don't want to put anyone on the street. And so having, you know, guidance with what to do with late fees, what to do, you know, when someone can't pay the rent, what, you know, coming up with solutions and payment plans and waiting for government assistance to come. All that was given to us and extremely helpful. And then I guess the last thing is how to conduct business in a shutdown, in pandemic, with social distancing. And, you know, that took some time, but our industry quickly adapted to things like virtual tour technology. There were a lot of people, including our company, were in the early stages of some of this technology before the pandemic. The pandemic accelerated it. So virtual tour technology, virtual leasing technology, doing remote leasing, all got very accelerated. And, you know, a lot of that stuff will stick after the pandemic. And again, NMHC was involved in helping members navigate the complexities of all that.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it there for this segment. We're going to be back with our next segment with Doug Bibby and David Schwartz right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
COVID-19 has greatly impacted the multifamily industry, emphasizing the need to reduce costs and increase revenue right now. PM Workforce can help you by providing intensely trained, performance-ready, certified leasing professionals. On-demand labor gives you more control over staffing costs. Their proprietary technology allows you to solve staffing problems within 60 minutes, 24/7, 365. Go to PMWorkforce.com before making a long-term hiring decision. Try one of their leasing professionals today. PM Workforce, the leasing company, consistently excellent.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Well, we are back and you are listening to Multifamily Matters. And today we're discussing the topic of NMHC, a look ahead to 2021 and beyond. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today by phone is Doug Bibby, president of the National Multifamily Housing Council, the NMHC. And also joining us is David Schwartz, CEO, chairman, and co-founder of Waterton, and he also serves as the current chair of the National Multifamily Housing Council. Before we jump back into the conversation, I want to remind our listeners, if you'd like to provide show topic, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. We talked a lot about what's happened in the last year and the history of the organization, but our topic is looking ahead. So let's transition into looking ahead and to 2021. What types of challenges and opportunities for the multifamily industry do you guys see in the post-pandemic environment whenever that happens? I'll go to Doug on that.
Okay. As David well knows and actually made the comment yesterday, is that we rely on jobs. We rely on job creation and we rely on job growth, you know, for our industry to be vital. So, you know, it's very, very important for the, you know, the vaccines, which we're very hopeful about, to make their way through the system so that businesses can feel confident about opening up again. until we get to that point, what we're seeing is, you know, in the downtown areas in particular, in urban high-rises and even urban product, people have been moving out to the suburbs. And so, and David can talk to that in depth. But, you know, in the short run, what we really need to see is for people to get healthy and for businesses to and to get confident about going out into the economy and being part of the economy again, and for businesses to reopen. And I'll turn it over to David for the rest of that one.
Yeah, I think it's all about the vaccines. So, you know, looking into 2021, you have the pre-vaccine, which we're in, kind of a continuation of 2020, a low demand environment, and then post-vaccine. I think our house view is a pretty robust V-shaped recovery. I think the stock market would suggest the same. It's predicting that, and that our view is most companies will want people to go back into the office. And so there'll be a reason to live in apartments near work, near transit, and and there's a tremendous amount of pent-up demand out there. There are numbers out there that there's 5 million excess households living at home, for example. So I personally can attest to that. A lot of young people decide to live with mom and dad because why pay rent in an expensive apartment that's close to work when you can't go to work? So, so a lot of pent-up demand that's going to get released as companies bring people back to work. And of course, there's the nightlife and all the other reasons to live in urban and suburban areas. And so we're pretty bullish about the release of that demand into the multifamily space.
Paul, if I could just add a couple
sure.
of metrics on this thing. I think that what David was talking about, I mean, we've seen the highest number of young adults, I'm saying the 20 to 34-year-olds, living at home since the 1940s. So, you know, that's a big number that's just waiting to get back into the system. And then the other two that I would give you is that we're not building enough housing. We're way short of what we need to build. So you're going to have demand coming in with not enough units being built. And then the third thing I'll give you is that the operators themselves are not over-leveraged. They've been locking in really generationally low rates on their debt, and they're in very strong position to come out of this, out of the gate very strongly. You know, we were the first sector to come out of the gate after the 2008-2009 recession, and I do believe that this sector is very well positioned to come out strongly after we get past this pandemic.
And David, what are you seeing or what are your thoughts about 2021 and new construction of multifamily properties? Is that something that we're going to see a big uptick in?
Well, you're going to see more deliveries in 21 because in 2020, so much of the new construction was delayed because of shutdowns. And so that's kind of an artificial, you know, delivery of supply levels at that, you know, higher supply levels. As far as starting new projects, that's more challenging. So if you're a developer looking to capitalize and start a new development, the pipeline in post 2021 is going to be tougher because, you know, the fundamentals aren't as good. You know, you have rents down or flat in most parts of the country. Costs are up. Construction costs are being impacted by the home improvement market, the single family market, which is strong, and it's causing prices for materials to go up and labor to go up. And so there are a lot of headwinds on the development side, and as Doug said, that's going to exacerbate the overall housing shortage as we come out of this recession.
And I'll open this question to either one of you, but where do you see the different segments of the industry in 2021? For instance, affordable, student, value add. Where are the highlights, you think, that we're going to see in 2021? Where should people be looking?
You want to start, David? Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So the softest part of the market's the Class A. And if you were to drill down more, the Class A in urban areas is the softest. And so I think that's going to be the most challenging sector. The affordable or value add, or sometimes we call naturally occurring affordable, is fairly strong. Because we don't, in good times or bad times, we don't build much in the way of affordable housing. There's an overall shortage of that. And so that's kind of the sweet spot right now as far as performance. Mm-hmm. And now that performance has winners and losers. If you have a value add or call it a Class C or B garden apartment in suburban Charlotte or suburban Raleigh, that's probably doing pretty well. But if it's in an urban area, we have Class B high rises in urban areas. Those aren't performing so well. So, mm-hmm. it's kind of mixed performance across the country.
Yeah.
Let me just add to that. I think while we're seeing with the affordable units that are out there, there's heavy demand for them. People do not want to lose them. They're going to hang on to them as best they can. They have waiting lists to get on them. So David's right. From a perspective of performance right now, the affordable product is doing very, very well. I worry most about it, though, because I think that we've lost a lot of affordable product over the years, and we are not building enough for lots of reasons, including heavy regulatory burdens and the cost of land and so on. So I think I worry that we were already facing an affordable housing shortage and issues there before the pandemic, and I think that the hole is going to be deeper once we come out of this in terms of accommodating households who are looking for that housing.
Yeah, and the one thing I'd add with that is the data suggests when you just look at collections that rent collections are the most challenging within the affordable sector, because the residents and households there are the ones most impacted by the recession. So there's lots of demand for it, but there's also real economic pain with the households that live in some of those communities.
All right. And I guess that nobody has a crystal ball, but what kind of timing are we looking at for things to turn the corner? What are you looking at in your projections, David, as far as getting back to somewhat normal?
Right. Well, I think the stimulus bill that passed is a down payment. So there's $25 billion of renters assistance. That's going to help a lot of households just kind of catch up on rent.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to need more. Some say there's $70 billion plus of unpaid rent out there, and
wow,
that doesn't include, where we are in 2021 and beyond. So we have some catch-up to do. But we think, call it occupancy and rent, is going to take a number of, it could be 2 years, 3 years to get back to pre-pandemic levels. And some markets, it's already at pre-pandemic levels, and some markets, it's way behind. And so, like I said, there's winners and losers, but kind of as a country, it could take 2 to 3 years on average.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break here. We're going to be back with our next segment of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Well, we're back and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of NMHC, a look ahead to 2021 and beyond. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today by phone is Doug Bibby, president of the National Multifamily Housing Council, NMHC. And also joining us is David Schwartz, CEO, chairman, and co-founder of Waterton, who also serves as the current chair of the National Multifamily Housing Council. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solution for properties across the U.S. PM Workforce, the leasing management company, consistently excellent. Allegion, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties, and CTS, complete technology solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. Gentlemen, during the break, I mentioned that I wanted to really kind of talk a little bit about what is timely at this point in time, because we're just days away from having a new administration in the White House, as well as a new Congress, with control going over to one of the other sides of the aisle. So, what does that mean? This new presidential administration and the Congress mean for the apartment industry?
Dave, you want me to start?
Sure.
I think, Paul, as a candidate, Joe Biden had put forth a very comprehensive housing plan that really he proposed investing $640 billion over 10 years in programs, and I'll quote, to promote housing that is affordable, stable, safe and healthy, accessible, energy efficient and resilient, and located near good schools and with reasonable commute to their job. So, it sounds like motherhood and apple pie, but it's a very comprehensive plan. And I think his administration will be very committed to not only to housing, with his designation of Marsha Fudge as Secretary of HUD. It's an excellent choice. We know her well. But also, I think he is going to make a commitment through his administration to the segment we were just talking about, which is the affordable segment. I think that they're very focused on the people who have been severely disadvantaged by the pandemic and economic downturn, lost their jobs, lost their businesses. So I think we'll see a lot of attention paid to housing affordability issues. And they've got some challenges. We've got NIMBYism that's rampant in the country. We've got too much regulation that's stifling development and redevelopment. So we've got a lot of work to do, but I think they're quite committed, and that's good for us, in my opinion. David, you want to go next?
Yeah. I think if I were to handicap things with the makeup of the new Congress, and maybe I'm being optimistic, but I think fiscal spending in general will have a better chance of getting through Congress, and Biden, of course, has ran on fiscal spending, such as stimulus and a big housing plan. So I think we have a good shot of some of that happening, which will help create supply. And the other question is, how do you pay for it? And Biden also ran on a grand tax plan. I think that's going to be tougher. I think it's such a close Senate. You have Joe Manchin, who kind of can go to the left or the right and be the arbiter. So I think it's going to be more challenging to pass dramatic changes in tax. A lot of this stuff may get done, without paying for it through just pure fiscal spending, which will be good for the economic recovery. And I think you have bipartisan support potentially on a big infrastructure package, which could include housing on that. So I think in general, it'll be good for our industry.
And Doug, you'd mentioned that lobbying was one of the major roles of the organization. How long do you give the administration to settle in before you sick the dogs on them to start talking about the issues?
Well, I think, the president has already signaled that he's one of the first things he's going to do is increase the assistance to renters and to owners. If you go back to what the House tried to do with the second package, they proposed $100 billion to go out in rental assistance. And we really, that's, probably close to what we're going to need. So I expect them to act as quickly as they possibly can. David pointed out there are going to be some challenges there because it's extremely tight in both the Senate and the House. But, we are meeting with the Biden team, right now we're meeting with the Biden team in Treasury, mm-hmm. Just talking about how this $25 billion is going to be administered as quickly as possible. And so, I think they're going to hit the ground running. I think the president-elect expects to introduce an infrastructure package in the first 100 days of their administration, and that will give a further boost to the economy. And we've been working really hard. You talk about unleashing the lobbyists on getting them to make housing a very fundamental part of any infrastructure package. Because if you go out with just fixing roads and bridges and so on, and you don't address the housing side of this thing, you're really not going to do your job properly. So that's where we're working right now on the first round of the $25 billion in aid going out. We're talking to them about how much more we need and how to do it. And the third piece, we're talking to them about infrastructure and what can be done prudently for our economy.
And Doug, I was just curious, because obviously we went through a presidential election cycle this year. But, the job never ends as far as the lobbying that your organization does. But the landscape changes. Does it change every 2 years when new elections, midterms come in, as well as the presidential cycle? Or how does that work?
It can. Yeah, absolutely it can. Because if the Democrats took back the Senate, in 2 years there will be elections. The House has elections every 2 years anyway. Mm-hmm. If the House flips, the Republicans take charge of the House, then that changes the dynamic. You have new chairs and new subcommittee chairs. You have potentially roadblocks or stimuli in either case. So yeah, I mean it, you're absolutely right. It never ends. Mm-hmm. People say, well, is it better now? And I say, no, it's just different. One administration to the next, one committee chair to the next. It's just different. They have different priorities, and so we have to be ever vigilant. I agree with you.
Yeah, and David, when it comes to different political environments and different markets, because I know you have properties, for instance, in California. So mm-hmm. That's a different animal than a property in Florida, maybe. Tell us a little bit about how you navigate, from an operation standpoint, the different state legislatures and that you have to deal with. There are different rules and regulations and laws.
Yeah, that's just add that to the list of things NMHC gets involved in, and as a national owner-operator is top of mind. Is the regulatory environment in different states and what the legislatures are up to with respect to regulations. We all are aware in California there was a referendum on the ballot, Proposition 21, which was a rent control bill, very onerous. And so we, as an industry, had to fight that. And we raised a lot of money. NMHC was critical in getting members to focus on that. You know, you go to other states like my home state in Illinois. In the lame duck session, there's legislation being proposed here that would be a rent control bill, effectively. And so there's no rest for the weary. This is, you know, federal level, all the stuff we talked about, and then each state, and you know, and it can go down to local municipalities implementing, you know, onerous rules that owners and operators have to follow. So it's a challenging industry to stay on top of all this stuff, to say the least.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we're going to break it here and come back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Multifamily properties' water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Well, we're back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of NMHC, a look ahead to 2021 and beyond. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me today by phone is Doug Bibby, president of the National Multifamily Housing Council, the NMHC. Is also joining us is David Schwartz, who's the CEO, chairman, and co-founder of Waterton, and he's also serving as the current chair of the National Multifamily Housing Council. I want to talk a little bit. I know this is something that's very important to the organization, and that is the commitment, the significant commitment to the diversity and inclusion and equity efforts. What are you guys going to be doing? What have you been doing, and what will you be doing in 2021 in that regard? And I'll open that up to Doug.
Okay. Well, let me start. I think you know, we've had a diversity and inclusion committee for well over a decade, and we were doing some good work. In my opinion, we were talking about best practices. We were putting on forums a couple times a year. We were bringing speakers in front of the membership. You know, we were doing what I thought was a lot of good work. And then the George Floyd thing happened, and I think it really broke the dam, and people, and really increased people's awareness of the racial inequities and you know, the lack of economic inclusion in this country. And I formed a racial equity task force, you know, that first convened in July of 2020. And we agreed that what we do is put a framework together for advancing economic inclusion for commercial real estate professionals of color within NMHC member organizations and across the multifamily sector. And our focus is really in three areas. It's how do the minority firms get access to capital and credit? What can multifamily firms do in their discretionary spending? And that's suppliers, and how can they increase the representation of minority firms getting some of that discretionary spending? And then finally, there's a whole talent ecosystem from early career professionals all the way through to C-suites and boards of directors. So what we have in front of us are some products that will be coming out in the summer. One will be a housing equity toolkit, you know, for to support members in addressing, you know, this issue of economic inclusion and diversity and inclusion. And then we're going to actually have a toolkit that goes out. That's for their internal purposes, and then we have a toolkit that's going to come out for their external purposes. How can they be part of their community and fomenting better decisions that promote economic inclusion and so on? So really proud of what we're doing there, and we're not alone. There are a lot of organizations and a lot of companies that are doing things in this regard, and I'll turn it over to David here.
Yeah, David.
Yeah, as a member of the organization, we as companies look at our residents and the diversity of the households that live in our communities, and think it's very important that our companies are similarly diverse like our communities, and so this is really critical. And some of the things NMHC is doing is helping us across the board, whether, it's how do we find diverse talent or how do we find suppliers or capital or, that are from companies that are diverse and tapping into the ecosystem, getting entry-level positions filled with diverse candidates and grow them, hopefully, into C-suite positions. And so these are really critical. The membership really wants access to this information, and these toolkits, when they come out, are going to be really important.
Go ahead.
Paul, I was just simply say that we're going to NMHC is going to host a virtual racial equity event on February 25th, and we will be sharing further details about this. And you can take a look at our website at www.nmhc.org for further details on that. But we've expanded our partnerships with allied organizations, and are actually some of our member companies are coming in now as sponsors in these kind of initiatives. So we're seeing a real groundswell of interest and participation in this area. This is not a flavor of the month issue. This is something that I think fundamentally is going to cause us all to be rethinking the way we do business going forward.
And David, I wanted to ask you because you from the standpoint of operating a company with multifamily assets across the country, you happen to be obviously very involved in NMHC, but for an operator. Give other operators an idea of how they could use this toolkit. For instance, how would you disseminate this information out throughout your entire organization until you get down to that property level?
Right. It would be, there's going to be two toolkits. It's one is the NMHC Housing Equity Toolkit, and that'll support members in addressing racial and housing equality, economic mobility, both in the work, in their own work and practices relative to our residents, and in the neighborhoods and communities where they operate. And then the other toolkit, the NMHC Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Toolkit, will be an actionable resource that provides best practices and guidance for integrating diversity, equity, and inclusion in all facets of the company's culture and operations. So that's some of the things I talked about, with respect to finding vendors that are diverse companies and other, tapping into an ecosystem, talent ecosystem of diverse talent that, and professional development programs to move them across, hopefully, to the C-suite levels as these are implemented.
And Doug, as far as I know, before you mentioned with the George Floyd incident that occurred, it really kind of opened up the floodgates on this nationwide, obviously. But prior to that, NMHC had been doing a great job with this topic. How are you communicating that to your members? Were you having the seminars to discuss that back then?
Yeah, we were. We actually had a committee, a D&I committee that was quite active and was growing. But we also put on a couple of forums each year, which were drawing attention and just trying to also promulgate best practices. And I'll give you one example. I mean, I think, you know, what we hear too often is we can't find those people in quotes. And what that means is that their systems of identifying talent and working with recruiters, for example, just weren't expansive enough and rigorous enough. And there are plenty of talented people out there. You have to build an infrastructure so that you can identify them. But you also have to build an infrastructure and a culture within your company to make sure that people of color, women and people of color, have opportunities to grow within the organization and can be candidates, as David said, for the C-suite. We're also seeing some of our member companies really take this to heart. I can give you some examples like CBRE, and Camden, where they have really worked hard to diversify their boards of directors. So, I think that what we're trying to do is just make sure that they understand the best practices that are out there and to help them. Because I can't run a company, a member company, but I can certainly give them ideas.
That makes a lot of sense. We're going to transition here because we could talk about this topic for quite some time. Mm-hmm. But I want to transition and ask you guys to tell a little bit about a little bit more about what's going on within your companies. And if someone wanted to reach out to your company or you and find out more, how could they do that? I want to start with you, Doug. And I just want to congratulate you. I know that the Excellence Awards, the 2020 Excellence Awards, were given out from the Multi-Housing News, and you won the inaugural Lifetime Achievement Award. So congratulations. That was quite an honor.
Thank you, Paul. I was very gratified to receive that award. I appreciate it.
Yes. Well deserved.
Thank you, David.
and by the way, I know that you were planning on retiring. You'd announced your retirement, but in lieu of what's been going on, you've kind of extended that for a little while. But tell us a little bit about that, and then I want to throw it over to David to tell what he's doing.
Well, you know, as David and I have talked a number of times, I mean, I love what I do. This is the dream job of my life. It's been the capstone of my career, but I just felt that, you know, I'm getting up there, I felt that I should get out of the way for some younger talent to come in. But David and I talked about that, you know, do we want to really start a search in this late spring of 2020 and potentially have someone come in and try to run an organization virtually and, you know, just all the difficulties there. And it's going to be a tough year for us financially. It's a tough year for any trade association that relies on, you know, a variety of revenue sources. And so we agree that it just makes more sense, you know, for me to stay on. We're looking potentially for, me to say goodbye to everybody at the January 2022 annual meeting, which we hope and pray will be a virtual meeting in Florida. So, we just decided it'd be better for me to stay at the helm, and I'm delighted to be at the helm.
Well, everybody's. I'm excited that you're staying on. I know you're looking to retire at some point in time, but it's a great organization. As I said, I've been to many events, and I've been very impressed with the work that the organization does. David, tell us a little bit about Waterton and what you're working on. And I'd love to have you on. I don't think we have time today, but I'd love to have you on to talk about Resitality.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to do that for a different time. But
yeah.
Just to add on with Doug, I started my chairmanship almost 1 year ago. At the annual meeting last year, and then the pandemic hit in March. Very quickly, and we were all set, you know, to recruit and for Doug to retire. And Doug, you know, was very quick to suggest maybe now is not the best time. And I was so thankful and thrilled, and my fellow officers were, that Doug came to that conclusion. And I just want to point out, when Doug started at NMHC, his first meeting was at 9/11 in 2001 in Washington. And so, you know, he started at NMHC at a crisis and is ending at a crisis. and so he, Doug had the, has the experience, and it's proven itself over the past year to lead through a crisis. And I speak on behalf of the membership, the officers, and I know Doug's team has told me personally how happy and thrilled they were to have the continuity of leadership through this crisis. So it worked out well for me, selfishly.
Yeah, well, we've got 30 seconds left. Tell us a little bit about Waterton.
Yes, so our primary business is value-add multifamily investments. So we have about a $6.5 billion portfolio, about 25,000 units. We just raised our largest fund to date, and it focuses on finding multifamily properties in major markets across the country where we can create value, usually through renovation, repositioning. So we have a big appetite to do it. And year-end closed two deals in Honolulu. We bought one in San Francisco, so somewhat contrarian. We're acquiring some in Los Angeles. But we think there'll be a lot of opportunity with the big run-up in demand as we come out of the pandemic.
Well, that's wonderful. And by the way, for our listeners, I will be posting on our website at multifamilyradio.com on this episode page the logos for both NMHC and Waterton. With a, if you click on it, you'll go to their website if you want to find out more. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much. I've really enjoyed having you on. I know you've got someplace you've got to be, but thank you so much for taking the time today to visit with us, and I'd love to have you back on again sometime soon.
Well, we'd love to, I know. And I just want to make one point of clarification for you, Paul. I'm not retiring. I'm just stepping off this job. I'm too young to retire.
That's right. Well, I can tell you this. I've seen you at the shows, and I can't keep up with you. So, so anyway.
Same here.
Thanks. thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. And we're going to be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.